Okay, please let me know if you can hear me. My voice is not as loud as it usually is. Okay, so I hope everybody has both sets of Mikorot, the individual sheet that I gave that has Rav Kook on one side and Rav Shmuel Mogilev on the other, as well as a couple of collected sources from Tanakh and Gemara. I guess there's no surprise as to why I chose the topic that I did for today. Coming off the week that we just all experienced, both communally and individually, we find ourselves really in a unique time. A time in which, as a communal experience, we've mourned and celebrated and really enjoyed the experience of being within a religious Zionist community, recognizing the historic nature of the gift of Medina Yisrael, recognizing how much it has contributed to each of us individually as well as to our community. And I have to say that these kind of moments, as we've experienced last week, are so unique and so special. They offer us so much in the moment. And it's just like every Chag, the challenge is, as the Chag passes, what do you do with all of those feelings? How do you bring those things home? What do you do when you return to your house? What do you do when you return to your families? What do you do when you return to the news? You know, after Matan Torah, Hashem said to Bnei Yisrael, return l'olechem. It's kind of an odd situation. Here they were at the peak of their closeness to Hashem, and Hashem tells them to go back to their tents. Because the truth is that at Matan Torah, the moment's created for you. At a Chagiga, the moment is created for you. You dance, you know, you feel, you hear, you think about it. When you go home, that's where the challenge begins. What do you take with you from those created moments in the community? What do you take with you from those heights of emotion, religious connections, etc.? And particularly, this is true of every Chag, but particularly right now, with regard to the state of religious Zionism, this year is unique. This year, the challenge, when you go home, is very different than it was last year. Last year, there was a lot of foreboding. This year, we knew what happened. This year, you have people both in Eretz Yisrael and here, who have been grappling with, what does it mean to be a religious Zionist? And a totally different level than the question was put to me a couple of months ago out in Detroit when someone said to me, not from a religious Zionist community, what does the term even mean, religious Zionist? If I'm religious, I'm Zionist. I support Israel. Of course, Israel's important. What does it even mean? The term didn't even mean anything to them. So there's something that's funny about that. Yeah, if you're religious, Eretz Israel is important to you, of course. But if you're a religious Zionist, it's important to you on a whole nother level. And if you're a religious Zionist today, it's different than it was a year ago. I don't feel like an alarmist and an extremist in saying that post-disengagement experience and identification of what it means to be a religious Zionist after the disengagement needs essentially to be re-examined. It is essentially being re-examined. We currently here in Chutz La'aretz have perhaps the ironic luxury of looking at it from so many steps removed. Yeah, we'll dance at the Chagiga, we'll hear the Divrei Torah, we'll feel, we'll remind ourselves it's so important, and then we'll like book a trip. Right? Because that's a real, like, you know, that's a real expression of our belief. But in Eretz Yisrael, for the past few months, this year has been an incredibly different year than last year. This year, the same kids who were out in the streets all summer protesting and praying and davening and hoping that what they believed would somehow push the reality into a different direction, that yes, the disengagement wouldn't occur because their communities and their personal efforts and strivings were going to help change the Israeli majority's opinion and idea and vision of their future state. Those kids, they're not in school now. They're not in mainstream regular schools. There are whole programs being designed and created to try to reintegrate these very disaffected teenagers and post high school students, some who don't want to go to the army anymore, some who, actually, there's an ironic phrase being developed now. It's called, they're mitchardim. Mitchardim. We used to talk about mityavnim. Mitchardim. Now they're joining the Haredi community because, you know what, this whole ideology of state and Torah just didn't work. I went to yeshiva, and why do you want me to go to the army? That army? I'm not going to that army. So how do you deal with this reality, right? Being a religious Zionist pulls on two basic premises, two basic principles. One is that Eretz Yisrael is kadosh, Eretz Yisrael is important, Eretz Yisrael is essential to my religious identity, and the second, which is the one that is most challenged today, that even though those who are engaged in the effort of Medinat Yisrael are not sharing my same ideology, I still cooperate and believe that their efforts are valued and directed by Yad Hashem. That second principle is now under attack. There's no question about it. Those people, that plan, that whole majority of Israeli society, they don't have Kedusha. They are not a part of my identification. And pulling together both of these pillars of religious Zionism today is the central challenge to the communities that we so closely identify ourselves with and that we celebrate with, in principle, on Yom HaTzmaut, Yom HaZikaron, and Yom HaShoah. So what I wanted to do today is recognizing the delicacy of the topic. And in some ways, the first two mikarot that I offer are mikarot that really try to frame the way in which I want to examine what these two principles say, what these two pillars of religious Zionism mean to us, and what they might be saying about the future direction of religious Zionism. In Bamidbar Rabbah, a description is brought of the complicated nature of, in this case, halachic interpretation, elu matirim, elu asirim, elu peturim, ve'elu asurim. We have chachamim who look at the same mikorot, the same inyanim, and go in both directions. Right? It's mutar, it's asur. In issues of philosophy and in issues of perspective, there's no question that practically there are a lot of different directions that the communities can take. And certainly in something that we're currently right now embattled in, you know, we can all sit back and say it's not my issue. But if we want to examine how do we feel about it, how do we walk away from Yom HaTzmaut, what do we need to consider? My suggestion today is that we take advice from Malachim and just ask for a lev lishma, lishpot et amecha, lavin bin ra tovara, ki mi yuchol lishpot et amcha kaved hazeh. Yeah, it's tough. That doesn't mean that we stay away from it. We just ask for a lev shomea so that we can consider it with an open heart and think about it individually and collectively. Let's look at the first principle of religious Zionism. Eretz Yisrael is important. Eretz Yisrael is important to us as Jews, as religious Jews. So in many ways, the question seems superfluous. It's all over our tefillot. It's all over our davening. We say it all the time, right? Zion is ever present. And that is kind of the question that was put to me in Detroit. What do you mean a religious Zionist? If you're religious, you're a Zionist. That was divorcing politics from it completely. If you're religious, you support Zion. If you're religious, you support Eretz Yisrael. You need it. It makes no sense. Your religion, your Hadut, doesn't make any sense without Eretz. But not necessarily without Medina. So, totally divorced from politics, we see that there are three types of connections to Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban's connection called Ki ikar kol hamitzvot liyoshvim be'eretz Yisrael. It's kind of extreme, but he says it on a practical level. The ikar of every mitzvah, and he's not just talking quantitatively, it's not just the mitzvot that you can only do in Eretz Yisrael, it's not just about practice, but every mitzvah's fullest fulfillment is in Eretz Yisrael. So much so that the Ramban would say, all the mitzvot that are done out of Eretz Yisrael in the Midbar are only done in preparation. It's really only mitzvah chinuch. We only do it that way to get us into the habit, to appreciate the whole entire culture. But the purpose, the ikar, and for the Ramban, Lashon ikar is critical. When he says, v'ha ikar, that's when he's telling you what, that's his equivalent of v'ha emet. Let me tell you what it really is. What it really is, it's supposed to be fulfilled in Eretz Yisrael. So in terms of practice, in terms of being able to do mitzvot properly, for the Ramban, it's only Eretz Yisrael. Everything else is preparatory. The Gemara takes it even more fundamentally and says, Shakol hador be'eretz Yisrael domeh kimi sheyesh lo eloka. V'chol hador b'chutzal ha'aretz domeh kimi she'ein lo eloka. So on a matter of faith, when you live in Eretz Yisrael, you are, it is, so here you can say it's about your own individual faith, which is odd to say, right? You have a God, whereas if I get on a plane and live outside of Eretz Yisrael, what happens to my belief in God? It's just poof. Doesn't make any sense. But he's saying that in Eretz Yisrael, domeh kimisha yeshlo. It's not that you don't believe in Hashem when you're out of Eretz Yisrael, but Hashem is not there connected to you the same way. Sheyeshlo, right? It's Hashem's connection to you via Eretz Yisrael that is so much more dominant and prominent and present in Eretz Yisrael than it is in Chutzal Aretz. So here you have practice being impacted by Aretz and belief being impacted by Aretz. Connectivity to Hashem is there in Eretz Yisrael in a way that it's not elsewhere. But there's another level. And this is what I would venture to say that those first two definitions are definitions that people who aren't Zionists would totally agree with as well. Right? That's Kedushat Ha'aretz. The mitzvot are more special there. Your emunah is more special there. But this third way in which Eretz Yisrael has significance to us as a people is perhaps more uniquely prominent in the religious Zionist community. And that has to do with the historic destiny of B'nai Yisrael. That something happens to us as a people in Eretz Yisrael that does not happen to us, cannot happen to us, will not happen to us outside of Eretz Yisrael. And that is reflected in a couple of the Makorot here, but even let's just take the example from Bereshit. Hashem's promise to Abraham that he will be the source of bracha to everybody else is dependent and comes along with his mission to Eretz Yisrael. Getting to Eretz Yisrael is that precondition that allows you to become a source of bracha. And that becomes expounded upon by the Nevi'im into the concept of an Or L'Goyim. You are not fulfilling your national destiny as a people until Eretz Yisrael is a part of that peoplehood. Cannot happen. Right? B'nai Yisrael out of Eretz Yisrael are somehow less as an Am. And their national destiny, not their national fate, their national destiny is enhanced and strengthened and supported by Eretz Yisrael. So how does this connect to the principle of a political entity, of needing to have sovereignty over the land? Why does it matter to me if Jews are in charge of the land? If I have no connection, let's say, in terms of faith or practice with those who are ruling the land, does it matter if they're Jewish or Turk? Right? Why is there this emphasis? Why is there this desire to be sure, and even perhaps this highlighting of the Kedusha element of even secular sovereignty of Eretz Yisrael? Let me be clear that this is the heart of the crisis currently in Eretz Yisrael. The recognition that there's such a chasm between those who are leading the land, the political plans for Eretz Yisrael, and even the majority of the population is so separated from the Hitchashkut movement, from those who are living in Gush Etzion, we're living in Gush Katif. There is such a chasm that When you look at the protests that occurred before last summer, there was such an outpouring of unity from that community, right? From the religious Zionist community. The buses and the kids were all wearing orange and nobody was in school and it was all like the tefillot were incredible. It was in many ways really admirable. It's an extraordinary experience for these kids to stand on the streets with their belief right out there. What happened was, even after door-to-door knocking, having people write petitions, etc., etc., it became clear that the only people who cared about this were the same community. It was all of us. There was nobody else there. Nobody else on the street. Nobody else even sympathetically covering this situation. And now it's even more clear how great the chasm is, how little sympathy there is for the community that has suffered through the disengagement and is continuing to suffer through the disengagement. This type of divide in Israeli society has been highlighted like never before. We all knew it existed, but like never before as it is right now. And so the question of, do I really have a spiritual mission that is connected to this government is so highlighted right now and is so belated. It's such a painful question, which maybe has not been asked. Certainly have been asked before many, many times, but with such great angst right now. How is it that we can look at a very secular setup and a very secular government and still imbue it with a sense of our own spiritual mission and still feel connected to these people and say, yeah, you have Kedusha, I am working with you, we are going in the same direction, even for different reasons. So I want to look at some of the classical Mikorot before I look at our current understandings, even of the Rabbanim of these communities. Everybody draws, right? We all draw on Tanakh. We have to. This Mikorot that I brought you here, one of a million and a half. It's just simply a way of examining where how do we root this crisis in our history and in our Mikorot. If we look at Echa, Echa is a great text for this issue, right? It's a mourning. It's a text of mourning. It's also a text of tefillah. When you lose something, you pray, right? And when you express what it is you've lost, you're also expressing what it is you're hoping to regain. In Echa, we read, "Tavu ba'aretz sha'areha, ibeid v'shiber b'richeha, malka v'sareha bagoyim ein Torah." Tavu ba'aretz sha'areha, her gates, talking about Yerushalayim, her gates have been sunk into the earth, right? Ibeid v'shiber b'richeha, her bars have been broken and lost. What are the gates and the bars? Obviously, we're talking about the destruction of Yerushalayim, right? That's the whole Eicha. But why choose to isolate the gates? What do the sha'arim of the city represent? Sorry? Protection. The border, right? It's also the way in which people come in. You can welcome. It's the way in which you define your city. It is the municipal borders. And it is the security that is offered by a well-ordered society, right? Sha'areha. And the same thing is confirmed in the next, right? Sha'areha and Bricha, they're both the bars, the protection, the security that are offered. Those represent the state. They totally represent the way in which a society is organized by law and protected. And should we have any question whether we're correctly interpreting the metaphor, the pasuk goes on to then say, Malka v'sareha, the melech and his officers are the ones who have been taken into captivity. And a result of all of this, the whole secular superstructure of the city has been broken and lost. What happens? Ain't Torah. It's not because there is no Torah, then the secular government gets lost. It is necessity that we have a structure. By the way, don't get mistaken. Melech is always secular in Tanakh. A melech needs a navi in order to keep him in line. A melech must write a Torah in order to make sure that he follows it. A melech, and obviously there are multiple examples of melechim who are not kadosh, but a melech is never assumed to hold the same mantle of kedusha as a Navi. And the Melech here is clearly with Sha'areha and Bricha'a and Sareha. They represent the infrastructure of a city. The loss of that infrastructure, the loss of that security, creates a condition where Ein Torah. It's the same as true in secular history. The Enlightenment only happens when the wars are over. Just no one's going to sit and study the ideas of life when they have to subsist. Right? You study, you reach heights, you get Kedusha when you have security. So the loss of that structure was really critical. And it has its impact on society. Ein Torah. Gam Nevi'eha lo matzu chazon me'Hashem. Right? Hashem also takes a step back. Having a secure city, having a strong society, is a necessary condition for Torah. It's a necessary condition for Nevuat Hashem. The Gemara in Talmud Bavli, in Sanhedrin, will tell us, it's not just a governmental structure. Governmental structure is necessary for security. Fine, I hear it. Another thing, another feature is necessary before Mashiach can come, before sort of Bnei Israel are at the step where they can reach their historic destiny. V'amar Rabbi Abba, Ein lecha keitz migula, migola, mizeh. You're not going to have a sign of the end of the gola, the end of our exile, a better sign than this one. What's the sign? It takes a pasuk from Yechezkel. Ve'atem, the Navi, right? As a voice piece of Hashem is speaking to who? Hare Yisrael. I'm talking to you, the mountains. Ve'atem Hare Yisrael, Antechem Titenu Uprichem Tisa'u La'ami Yisrael. Your branches, you have to offer, and your fruits need to become multiple for my nation. Before Bnei Yisrael can come to Eretz Yisrael, before Kibbutz Galiot can actually be achieved, the land itself has to develop. The land itself, the physical land, needs to grow, it needs to sprout forth, it needs to offer its bounty. In the continuation of the Pasuk, we can see in the next Gemara, in Gemara Megillah, where it also, in discussing how the structure of the Shemona Esrei needs to be set up. The Gemara, the Anshe Knesset Gedola, by the way, are figuring out in Shemona Esrei we have multiple psukim and multiple brachot, right? And in those brachot, they fall into a certain order. You might think it's just thematic, right? You make a nice connection, one to the other. But it has great halachic significance, because in Shemona Esrei, you have only one pticha and one chatima. And you have a series of brachot, which means you only have one Baruch Atah Hashem, and you only have one conclusion of the bracha. Each of the brachot in the middle there is dependent on being linked to the bracha beforehand in order for it to actually benefit from the original Baruch Atah Hashem. If there's a break in that connection, then it's not really a bracha. So the ordering of the Shemona Esrei was critical. And in that discussion, the question is asked, why do they think that it is desirable to put Kibbutz Galiot after Birchot Hashanim? Right? There has to be a reason for ordering it this way. The same pasuk is brought. V'atem harei Yisrael, anpechem titenu, prichem tisa'u la'ami Yisrael. Why? Why does the land have to develop? Why do we have to have Birchot Hashanim before Kibbutz Galiot? Ki kervu lavo, because the Bnei Yisrael are going to come. And Birchot Hashanim has to happen first. The country itself has to develop. The country itself has to be thriving from the potential of its physical abilities in order for Kibbutz Galiot to occur. And Rashi hammers at home. He says, what does it mean? Uprichem tisau lami Yisrael ki kervo lavo. Ilema Kibbutz Galiot pe'et Birchot Hashanim hi. Kibbutz Galiot can only happen during Birchot Hashanim. So there is an invested interest. If you're invested in Kibbutz Galiot, if you believe it can happen, you have an invested interest in creating Birchot Hashanim. Birchot Hashanim is a precondition. The land itself must thrive. If the land isn't thriving, forget about Kibbutz Galiot. It's not going to happen. It's got to wait another step. So So yes, there's a spiritual significance to having strong sha'arim, having strong sarim in the city, having birchat hashanim in Eretz Yisrael. Those are not just nice things. Those are spiritually significant for Kibbutz Galiot and for the redemptive process of Mashiach. It is a necessary condition. It's in Navi all over the place. Religious Zionism simply took it and said, we cannot ignore the opportunity that Hashem is giving us right now. This is a chance for us to strive with the process of Geula. And in fact, I want to direct your attention to two historic situations that are actually very different but incredibly similar to our current crisis, I would say, in the definition of religious Zionism. And this is the extra sheet of Mekorot that I gave everybody. I have more if anyone doesn't have it. Okay, we'll look first at Rav Shmuel Mogilever. Mogilev is a town right next to about 20 minutes out of Minsk. Rav Shmuel Mogilever lived there around 1820. Mogilev is about 20 minutes north of Minsk. Volozhin is about 20 minutes south of Minsk. Radzin is also right around there. So this is the whole Litvisha community in Belarus at this time. Shmuel Mogilev receives his smicha in about 1840 from Volozhin, one of the prominent rabbanim of the community. And Shmuel Mogilev, in our discussion, is incredibly significant because he is one of the first rabbanim from Volozhin and from Litha to say that we need to be mishtatef pu'ula with who, of all people? With maskilim. He starts Mizrahi. Mizrahi, by the way, is called originally Merkaz Ruchani, the center of spirituality. The idea that we can't provide a core heart of Ruchniyah to a movement that is primarily being led by Maskilim. Now, let's remember why this is so incredibly dramatic. If there's anything good that anybody in the Frum Welt of Europe would say about the Maskilim, it was only, perhaps, that they are responsible for ending the war between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim. That's it. For approximately 50 years, you have the Hasidic community and the Yeshivish community really embattled in like a terribly destructive war. So much so that you have people being arrested by the government on either side for breaking laws that they had been reported by the other community. It was incredibly destructive. There are people who died in prison as a result of these recriminatory reports. Comes the age of Rav Shmuel Mogilever. He's not responsible particularly. There were many such who recognized we cannot afford to fight each other when we're both being attacked by this whole movement of enlightened thinkers who have Western education, who are now being employed by the government, who will attack us both. And if we don't sort of rally around the wagons, around our own communities, We're doomed. All of the laws and many of the restrictions that the Jews faced in Eastern Europe, increasing difficulty, came from the Maskilim, who reported on, well, if you want to make life difficult for Jews, this is how you're going to do it. Make it hard for them to do blah. In any case, Rav Shmuel Mogilever is one who takes this reality and says, it's not just that we should join forces with each other, but there's something they have. There's something in their new definition of Judaism that we can harness. We should cooperate with something that's going on in the world of the Maskilim. An incredibly radical step for him to make. And this is this little section, these two sections that I brought you, are some of the most poignantly expressed views of Rav Shmuel Mogilever about this issue. And so you can see his struggle between secular and religious identifications of Judaism is somewhat akin to our current one. How do you work with people who have a very different destiny and a very different vision of what the Jewish future will look like? Rav Shmuel Magilev addresses it dafka on the issue of Zionism. So if you'll follow with me, I think it's a text that's clear enough and on point enough to read along and to really draw from it important messages. We'll start in the beginning. We'll take a couple of breaks along the way. We'll read the first few lines. Okay? Basof davar, recognizing the conditions of the time, basof davar, alai laharim kishofar koli el achi bnei ami. It is my responsibility to scream out like a shofar to my people, bnei ami. Hinei ze ke'alpayim shana, hinenu mikavim leviyat mashiach tzidkenu. Shigalenu min galutenu hamara v'kabet nirchenu me'arba kamfot ha'aretz la'artzenu. V'sham neshev batach shalo, ish tachat gafno v'tachat te'inato. Okay, so he's recognizing, identifying, we have this tikvah. We live in terrible times. We have this tikvah. What is this tikvah? Of Biat Mashiach. Biat Mashiach and Kibbutz Galiot, everybody comes to Eretz Yisrael with security. Using, of course, the familiar Lashonot of Ish Tachat Gafno V'Tachat Te'inato. And then he identifies this belief with even more importance. Ha'emuna hazo chazaka b'libeinu v'hi nechamteinu ha'achat v'yimei anyenu umareinu harabim. This emunah is our singular consolation. This belief in Biyat HaMashiach and Kibbutz Galiot in a destiny, an historic destiny that will change, is our singular consolation to the difficulties of Galut. The af, and then he gets a little bit more particular. And everyone so far is agreeing with him. The af, ki bimeah ha'achrona. And even though in the last century, kamu anashim bikir beinu, v'chichashu be'emunah zu, v'yimchaku et tikvatenu me'al ruach libam, v'yisaruha gam misidrei tfilatam. Even though in this past century we have encountered people from our own community who have taken this belief and not only disassociated themselves from it, but even taken it out of their seder tefillah. Can you imagine taking Mashiach and the belief in Kibbutz Galiot out of tefillah? You know how many holes you have? Who was he talking about? Exactly. He's talking about the reform movement. That literally, the first, one of their first steps in Hamburg was to go through the Sidur and to take away every reference to Zion, every reference to Mashiach, every reference to the return to Eretz Yisrael. Why is that? Why was that such a central thing? I mean, why that? Why something that seems so future, right? So not exactly relevant. It's not like anyone was talking about political Zionism at this age. Why was it so important to the early, they weren't called reformers at this time, they're called progressive rabbis. Why were they so dedicated to that? Because the existence in their prayers, in their daily prayers, of a hope for a national homeland ran against their efforts of the last 50 years. We've been begging for inclusion as Germans, as Austrians, as Frenchmen. We cannot admit that there is any practicable hope for us to be of a different nationality. So much so was this like a part of their new identity that they didn't even want to call themselves Jews anymore, because Jews came from Judah, which is Judea, which is a national homeland. They were now called Germans of the Mosaic persuasion, or Frenchmen of the Mosaic. They'll take themselves back to Moshe. Of course, Moshe never made it to Eretz Yisrael. Right? So we're Mosaic. We're back from the biblical era, but we're not really of this time period when Bnei Yisrael actually had sovereignty. Can't be. Right? So that is what he's talking about. He says, listen, if you believe that Zion and Mashiach is going to happen, recognize, you say it all the time, it's central to your tefillot, and if you don't believe it's practical, guess what? You're aligning yourself with those who want to take it out. Those are your choices. If, in fact, it's in your tefillah, then it's because you believe it, and because you're davening for it, and you think it could actually happen.
If you want to take it out, well, look what you're left with.
Look at what community you kind of, he didn't say that, but that's what he's really, by pulling out the example of the progressive rabbis, he's trying to highlight how central it is. There's no way we could really just, like, make it a metaphor. And in fact, he even identifies another possible solution to this challenge of, who do we belong to? Are we French? Are we German? Do we have this vision? Is this a practical vision of Bnei Yisrael really being in charge of themselves? Is that a possibility? And he points out in line five, Aval HaCharedim Shebikir Beinu. By the way, he's identifying his community now as the Charedim, right? We are the Charedim. Shebikir Beinu. We Charedim, we believe in the Tamuna of Sion and of Bnei Israel and Kibbutz Golia. We believe it. We daven about it all the time. It's there. It's central. It is not going anywhere. So we have another group of people who are dealing with this. These are Orthodox in Western Europe. Echad mayim gila et ta'ato. What does he think? Ki kol ha-yehudim ha-nechamot she-nevi'enu chazu lanu einam ela b'derech shalashonu m'litza. Don't worry. We don't really believe this stuff. I mean, we do, but it's more metaphor. It's symbolic. It's not a practical program. You know, symbolically, when Bnei Israel have kibbutz galiot, we'll still be here in Western Europe. We'll still be German citizens. But Kibbutz Galiot is of a different nature. It's not physically. We don't actually get up. It's of a different nature. By the way, historians debate about who he's talking about here. There's two possibilities, and it's incredible how separate those two possibilities are. Yes, it both is a German-Jewish community, but one candidate is Moses Mendelssohn, okay, who really metaphorically interprets a lot of Torah, but was still observant and still Orthodox. The other candidate, and it's a more controversial assertion, is that it was Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, who also, by the way, those two couldn't be more different from each other, but who also believed in remaining in your own community, a very separated community in Germany as German citizens. But everybody has to deal with what do we do with this concept? Is it practical or is it not practical? Right? And here Rav Shmuel Mogilever comes out with his own idea. At the very end, let's go to line 12. V'hineni mechayev b'zeh lahagid et da'ati kabel am, for everyone to hear. Ki lo kein hadavar emunatenu v'tikvatenu hi me'az v'ad ata. כי יבוא משיח צדקנו ויקבץ נדחי ישראל לארץ אבותם. Yes, משיח will come. Yes, there will be kibbutz galiot to the land. ותחת שהיינו נדחים בארצות זרים. And instead of us being pushed and depressed in strange lands, נעים ממקום למקום, wandering from place to place, what will happen? נשב אז בארצנו ונהיה לעם במלא מובן המילה הזאת. Only then will we become a nation in the fullest sense of the word. Being a nation cannot be complete in the Golan. You cannot be complete unless you're in Eretz Yisrael. That concept. So here is where he starts adopting things from the Maskevim. This word, Am, this concept of a national rebirth, this concept of being a nation, right? That wasn't just like an idea, but it was something that was practical, a program that people actually thought, we need to be a nation, we have to do something to be a nation. Bnei Israel were nations for thousands of years. What did you do to be a nation? You just were. Here, the Maskilim are saying, you want to be a nation, you have to be respectable, you have to have a culture, you have to have a language, right? The revival of Hebrew. It all comes from the secular Maskilim. V'tachat line 15, V'tachat hayinu l'chapa v'lishnina b'enei ha'amim. Instead of being disgusting and disregarded in the eyes of the amim, niyel l'chavod v'litiferet liyoshvei tevel. And here he pulls on that historic quality of Eretz Yisrael.
Going to Eretz Yisrael will turn you into an Am and allow you access to that last layer of what it means to be a part of Am Yisrael. Or Lagoyim, it cannot happen without Eretz Yisrael. If you do not go to Eretz Yisrael, you are not an Am, not in the sense of fulfilling that national destiny. You can't do it. You could do your mitzvot, you can have your emunah, maybe of a lesser quality, according to the Ramban and the Gemara, but you will never become that Or Lagoyim unless you have this capacity of being an Am in the fullest sense. The leader of Shmuel Magid over here, I want to just identify him as perhaps the earliest person who tries to recognize that being in Eretz Yisrael from a secular perspective imbues your religious identity as a Jew into a different level. You cannot separate the two. You cannot claim that you can only achieve everything that you want from as a member of Am Yisrael only from the perspective of Torah and Mitzvot as much as you can do in the Gola. It must include this movement of getting you and your Am to Eretz Yisrael, even if it involves being invested together with seculars. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's very interesting. Is the coming of Mashiach a precursor to this or not? It becomes clear in his writings that the coming of Mashiach to him is this elongated process in which, and this is one of those early sort of like groundbreaking shifts in religious Zionism, that this elongated process of the coming of Mashiach involves and necessitates human action. And Yavo HaMashiach is not this like instantaneous moment in which we act as passive agents or we're just recipients of something that happens. That is the groundbreaking shift in thinking that allows for religious Zionism to marry this idea of working along with very secular needs and very secular programs and still being a part of the process of Ki Yavo HaMashiach. I hear the Lashon there. What? It's not immediately clear from that phrase. Definitely not. Yes. I would differ. I would say that he is combining. He is actually identifying that the practical response itself, because he is talking about like a difficult galut, no question about it. What is his response here? It's not a Herzlian approach. It's not saying, let's save our necks. He doesn't say that. It's not just practical. He is dafka rooting it all in emunah v'tikvatenu and emunah ha'chazaka. This is the one thing that we must fulfill. And to further support it, he's not saying we need to do this just for the moment because we have no other solution, right? He's saying this is the definition of what it means to be an Am. You cannot be an Am without this, regardless of the situation, regardless of the politics of the age. He refers in only very general terms. Yeah, galut hamara. Okay, that's true. Galut is always mar, right? But here he's talking about how do you be the person, how do you be the Am that B'nai Yisrael are talking, that Hashem wants of B'nai Yisrael? It's not. I think that's because this isn't theology. And Rav Kook will take it even further. So let's turn the daf. I think that we have just a little bit of time. Let me give you the historic context of Rav Kook. Rav Kook is in Israel in the first decades of the 20th century. He's appointed as chief rabbi by the British mandate in the 1930s. He's in a very unenviable position. Very unenviable position. Not only because B'nai Yisrael are the Jews there are at the whim and whimsy of the British and of the Arabs and of the Turks, right? But also because as chief rabbi,
He somehow expected to create some type of unity, united voice between a very disparate collection of Jews. Where they came from, what language they speak, what they want from the place. I mean, there is no, and he says it, I brought you the first text on top, it didn't even line out, I wasn't sure we would read it, but there is no parallel, the cook says, to the door that he is facing. And I just think, actually, I love this quote because it is so, it's timeless. I think probably everybody who reads it will think of their own generation that way. So, and I think it applies as well to today. So Reinu hu dor nifla, dor shekulo tzimahon. Our generation is wonderful, wondrous, but it is all completely bewildering. And by the way, if you've studied any of Rav Kook, he's very much a Kabbalistic and poetic writer, very dense. It's difficult to make his way through, but these sections are actually relatively easy reads. They're not poetry, and they're not, he's really just expressing himself in an extraordinarily powerful way. It's very hard to find a parallel to this door in all of our history. Hu merkav mehafachim shonim. We have opposites here combined. And of course, he says morkav, right? It's not like we have opposites next to each other. Hu morkav. We are united. But from hafachim shonim, choshech ve'or, right, light and dark, mishamshim bo be'arbuvya. You know the halachic term arbuvya is when you can't tell the difference. We use it to describe bein hashmasha. Can't tell the difference between light and dark. Of course, he doesn't tell us who's light or who's dark here because he doesn't see it that way. The door is morkav. The door is be'arbuvya. It has choshech ve'or. Hu shafel v'yarud gam ram v'nitza. Hu kulo chayav, gam kulo zakai. Not chetzi chayav v'chetzi zakai. Kulo chayav v'kulo gam zakai. Right? The reality, the Am itself, is this organic entity that has in it. The Am has a natural essence. It is already united. It has in it hafachim. It has in it choshech v'or. It has in it zakai v'chayav. And then, by the way, what is he talking about just historically? He's talking about the old Yishuv and the new Yishuv. The old Yishuv came to Eretz Yisrael running from pogroms, right, around 1880 and earlier, settling just in no way just to live. Just to live in Eretz Yisrael, do Torah and mitzvot, yeshivot, didn't worry about working the land, didn't worry about establishing anything permanent necessarily, wasn't part of their program. And this, the Yishuv Chadash, the new Yishuv, was, sorry? Right. They were also, these are the Maskilim that Rosh Shmuel Magilover was working with. They're the ones who drained the swamps. They're the Chalutzim, etc. So could these two people be more opposite from each other, have anything united in common, other than the term Jew? And he needs to somehow satisfy this united, community, or unite this ununited community. And here's how he does it. And if you know anything about Rav Kook is by far the roots of religious Zionism in Eretz Yisrael. He is the person who takes all of the theory that people said in Europe about what Am Yisrael could be like in Eretz Yisrael, and he works tirelessly to unite those two communities to see that they could actually be the Am that Rav Shmuel Magilever was talking about was possible. Ruach ha'emunah, this is line one. Ruach ha'emunah, shiyitorer achshav. We have this national spirit in our people now. She'omrim rabim, many people say, mimachzikav, who are connected to this national spirit, she'inam nitkakim l'ruach elokim. They don't need any type of ruchniyot. They don't have any connection to God. Im hayu be'emet yicholim levaseis ruach le'umi kazeh b'Yisrael. If really it was possible that they could create this national identity based on this premise, hayu yicholim lahatzig et ha'uma al ma'amad hatum'ah v'hachilyon. If that was possible, what they would be establishing was a national identity that was Tuma and Chilion. But Rav Kook would say that's not even possible. Chilion is like destruction. Despicable. It would be Tuma and Chilion. It would be destructive. Aval, ma shehem rotzim, einam mod'im v'atzmam. What they want, they don't even know what they want. They think they want to establish B'nai Yisrael, this national identity based on a disconnect with God. They don't even know what they want. Because that is not a possible goal. Am Yisrael cannot be disconnected from Ruach Elokim. Even those who are actively seeking that. What would happen, according to Rav Kook? Kol kach mechubar hu Ruach Yisrael b'Ruach Elokim ad asher afilu misha omer she'eino nizkak klal l'Ruach Hashem kevan shehu omer shehu chafetz b'Ruach Yisrael harei haruach ha'eloki shura b'tochiyot nekudot she'ifato gam bal korcho. Somebody who believed in the spirit of Am Yisrael, even if he actively, decidedly, and with all intention says, I am not connected to Ruach Elokim, doesn't know it, but there is no way. He is by force, bal korcho, connected to Hashem, by being connected to Am Yisrael. If you work towards the fulfillment of Am Yisrael, if you work towards her security, if you work towards her prosperity, if you work towards her idea, if you develop the language, if you develop the land, if you develop the economy, if you are connected to the Am, you are connected to Hashem. That's it. Bal korcho. So his first possibility, it's an impossibility. It's not, you cannot establish a national identity based on Tuma because it doesn't exist. It wouldn't succeed. It could not happen. The national identity is itself married to Ruach Elokim. Just regardless of you, you're like insignificant. Your idea of what it might be doesn't matter. Hayachid haprati yachol lenatek et atzmo mimikorot hachayim. An individual can go on a hunger strike, let's say. Take himself away from mikorot hachayim. Lo chein ha'uma Knesset Yisrael kulo. Knesset Yisrael has a different vitality. Knesset Yisrael has a different destiny, has a different fate, and it has Ruach Elokim inherently in it. If you work for Knesset Yisrael, you work for Ruach Elokim. And I want to just point out at the very end, another sort of phrase where Rav Kook's ideology comes through very strong. I guess we'll start on line 19. V'ka'asher kvar nitrachaku meharegesh ha'umani, ha'emuni, I'm sorry. So as far, even though they're already split and separated and divided away from this religious faith and belief, the avodat hakodesh shel Torah u'mitzvot nishkachu me'itam, even though they've forgotten avodat hakodesh, lo matzu l'nafsham manoach. These individual Jews or these kihilot, they have never found any peace. They're not resting. They haven't left Israel. They're not traveling through India. Right? They haven't given up. If you're working toward this menuchat hanefesh, you may not know what it is, but what you're working towards is your connection to the Am. Ki im beruach ha'lu'umi. They've only found menuchat ha'nefesh in this ruach le'umi. Anyone who finds menuchat ha'nefesh in the ruach le'umi, in the national spirit, sha'al korcham yesh bo retivut u'musuriyut u'margul le'nefesh. Even if they don't know it, they receive that revival of their spirit. They receive that connectedness to Am Yisrael. And that goal itself is kadosh. Okay? So Rav Kook articulates it in the most clearest language that we can hear, the ideology of religious Zionism standing firmly on two pillars. One is Eretz Yisrael is essential to Knesset Yisrael's fullest destiny. Eretz Yisrael is that final capstone that allows us not only to have emunah, not only to do mitzvot, but also to be that Or LaGoyim, that national level of achieving fulfillment as human beings, as creations of Hashem, only occurs with Eretz Yisrael. That Eretz Yisrael has to be a sovereign Eretz Yisrael, because otherwise we're a dependent nation. It has to be a nation where B'nai Yisrael are ruling themselves. And even if it comes through the hands,
and is exercised in the hands of secularists who do not share our goals and who do not share our Torah and our mitzvot and our avodat hakodesh. They don't realize it, but they're contributing, and we must contribute with them. Rav Kook encounters this challenge. Rav Shmuel Mogilever encounters this challenge. And for certain, we're encountering the challenge. There's no question that today, how to be a religious Zionist who believes in both Eretz Yisrael HaShleima and the need to connect with Am Yisrael HaShleima, even those who do not understand, believe, or sympathize with the values that we hold. That connection is a necessary connection for the fulfillment of Knesset Yisrael. Currently, Rav Benny Lau, Rav Mordechai Alon, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein have all been working in many ways, some more outspoken terms than others, to reconnect our community with the majority of Israeli society. The chasm that was revealed over this last year, it's painful, it's real, and it won't go away without proactive efforts to not give up on your ideology, but to communicate and to make sure that as you lead and as you move forward, there are people behind you so that when you stand up for something, you're not standing up alone. And yes, on a very practical note, this is not just looking in the past and saying, what can we learn from the difficult times of last summer? It's also looking into the future and saying, how can we address the difficult times ahead? Do we allow the attack on this basic principle of religious Zionism to crumble that pillar and to say, no, we have nothing in common with these people and we will not participate? We will, you know, as many will say, you know, I tried the root of the Hasdei Yeshiva. I tried to do both. Didn't work. I'll go now and put my efforts and all my eggs in my Torah and mitzvot. Or can we still galvanize a community around those basic principles of religious Zionism that puts Eretz Yisrael central and requires that Am Yisrael work together toward that goal? The effort of recognizing how disconnected we are, not just to beat up on ourselves. And I can say it, but having heard it from Rav Benny Lau, who's running many programs like this, says, listen, Ashamim Anachnu. Everybody else did their part, but there's a part of us that has to recognize that we have been Minatek from the Am. 30 years we lived under the delusion that everybody thought we were really on the front lines and we were taking the hits for them and everything was fine and they really valued our service. And then it comes to us being kicked out and we realize they don't really care. Right? You have to recognize that and take it seriously. And now what do? So Israeli history now has been very ascendant. You know, ascendant. It's all been in pretty much, Baruch Hashem, a victorious path. The Yom Kippur War was met with, what was our response to the Yom Kippur War? It's our one big, real break in our ascendancy. What was the response to the Yom Kippur War? The Hityashut. Settlement began after the Yom Kippur War. Right? That was the secular nation saying, that was the government saying, we are going to get bigger and stronger and better and you're going to help us. Right? And what we needed to do, which we didn't know, was make sure that the values were being shared and that people understood what was happening instead of us going off to the mountains and the hills and leaving the Am behind. Right? And in many ways, we have an incredible state and an incredible achievement, both religiously, secularly, to be grateful and to be proud of. And we have this challenge of realizing that it takes a lot of heart wrenching and soul searching and a lot of work to make sure that your values and your Avodat HaKodesh is recognized, even if not shared, but moving forward. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you all for coming out.